Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. It's me, Dov, from Forza Italian Football, here for another Forza Italian Football Europod, European. It's not European football, it's Champions League and Europa League football podcast roundup, looking at the Italian teams and their performance in Europe this week. And to help me do it, bringing them back from the Paddy Shack, Podrick Whelan. Podrick, how are you?
I'm well, Dov, yeah, another successful week for the Italian teams, reasonably speaking. I think we can, it's not all going to be the fun we had in the last round of fixtures, but I think we can be reasonably happy with this one, can't we?
I think we can, but I think before we move on, I think we need to let everybody into a wee secret, because before recording this podcast, you did a wee quiz on The Simpsons, didn't you?
I did.
I did not.
I didn't even do a Napoli, I'm afraid. I was all the way down in the low bronze medal position.
Third. That's not bad.
That's not bad, but...
So what's that? FIF, hashtag FIF at the quiz.
At the quiz,
exactly. There you go, right. In the football. Where should we begin? Let's begin in Turin.
Begin in Turin, yes. It's got a bit of a ring to it.
That was funny. Juventus 1, Manchester United 2. Cristiano Ronaldo scored 65 minutes. Wonderful, really, really good goal that was. But then, 86 minutes in, Juan Mata and Leonardo Bonucci score goals. I mean, what on earth happened?
Oh, Dov, I think if you look up smash and grab in the dictionary, that is the game that's going to be there, because I don't know, you're almost lost for words after that. Is just so uncharacteristic Juventus, especially in the last, I don't know, decade. I think it's almost a decade since they were beaten at home in the Champions League group stages, which in itself is an incredible achievement. And you know, it really was just, I think, one of those games where it just goes to show you, you get your chances, and Juve had plenty of them. If you don't take them, then there's always a chance you'll be punished. And two set pieces, just so uncharacteristic. But they did. I think they hit the post twice, or the woodwork. They hit the post and the bar. They did have their chances to kill that game off. And then when they eventually get the goal and bring on Barzagli, and they were shutting up shop, it looked as if it was all done. And well, just that wasn't. Jose had his moment in the sun.
He did, right. Well, let's talk about a few things then, because some people have been getting on Chesney's back, which I don't understand at all. Because I mean, the free kick was a really, really good free kick, and I don't think he was too much to blame for the second goal as well, because that was just a ball pumped in the box that had been flicked on, and it's kind of like what do you expect them to do, kind of thing? You expect the defenders to maybe deal with that before he does.
I don't know. I fell more in the camp that was probably critical towards him. The first goal, I did see people kind of get on his back for the first goal. I thought that free kick was decent. It probably wasn't right in the corner, but I think if the game had ended a draw, I don't think there would have been an outcry for Chesney, but because of what happened a few minutes later, it was probably a good excuse for people to go back and maybe point at that goal, point the fingers in his direction for that one. The second one, maybe, I don't know, you could kind of look at your goalkeeper to come for that one, and I probably would be maybe pointing the finger at him after he kind of fumbles it a bit. He didn't seem too confident on it. So I wouldn't be too critical of him. I certainly wouldn't be, you know, oh, he's not good enough for Juve. I've seen like false goals and those kind of takes where Juve can't win the Champions League with this guy in goals, which are, I don't know, I think that's still a bit harsh. I think he's definitely a good goalkeeper, just to the mistake.
Well, that's kind of the weird thing, like, about him. Obviously, I really doubt that Paul Scholes is what Chesney since he's been
with Roma.
And obviously Roma, he kept Alisson out, and Alisson's now this amazing goalkeeper that everybody loves. And last season they pretty much kept Buffon out of the Juve team as well. He's been the better goalkeeper at Juventus for pretty much since he's been there, so he kind of deserves his spot. So I think the criticism on him's a bit harsh. Obviously, as well, a lot of people then have really kind of gone after Allegri for putting on Barzagli with what I think it was like, 7 minutes to go. Just decided, right, we're going to three at the back, wing backs, there we go, sharp. And people seem to think that was the reason. However, I think Jose Mourinho got this right.
That's exactly what I was about to say, though. I think it's the other dugout you probably have to look at, and the subs that came from the Man United point of things. I think hit the nail on the head there, rather than look at Allegri.
And back by popular demand, I've got Chris Vokes, Goal.com's Manchester United correspondent, former Italian football fancast when it was that, unfortunately, Italian football podcast person. you were on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, Chris, when Juventus destroyed United at Old Trafford, and now they've came to the Allianz Stadium, where Juventus haven't been beaten at home in a group stage since 2009, I believe, against Bayern Munich, and Man United came and won. How the hell did they manage that?
Not quite. I remember being at that Bayern game, actually. I remember seeing Pavel Nedved just as Bayern had scored the fourth goal up in the crowd, and he looked like he was in tears, like he just couldn't believe what had happened. Different kind of eventuality tonight, in that Juve were far better than any performance Juve probably delivered in that season. It felt a bit like Juve might be primed to do what they did at Old Trafford, especially after the Ronaldo goal, an amazing goal, but didn't quite see that coming from United, albeit they had one thing that was really different from the first leg, and that was Marouane Fellaini.
Well, that was kind of in the press conference after the game, like both coaches are asked about the impact Fellaini had, and it was kind of one of the things that I noticed during the game is that United kept trying swinging crosses into Alexis Sanchez, who's about 3 foot tall, and then you put a guy who's bigger than both me and you in the middle, in the box, and he causes exactly, we're massive, you more so than I, and you chuck a 190 centimetre guy in the middle of the box with a massive afro, and it just causes so many problems.
Yeah, exactly, and it's quite typical of the way that Mourinho has played with United at times, but then again, people who have followed Calcio for plenty of years know what Mourinho is like in terms of using the big, tough players on his side. Fellaini is the biggest and toughest that United have, and when they don't have him, they're a completely different side. In fact, if you saw some of the set pieces in the first half, when United were trying to do something like high or from out wide, they had like Pogba, Smalling, Matic, and that was about it. Maybe Lindelof on occasion, but that's not enough of a threat. Whereas Fellaini just gets about teams. He doesn't care. He gets his arms, his elbows, his whatever else. He just doesn't care what he throws at the ball, as long as he gets to the ball. And although he didn't set up the first goal, it was Pogba who was fouled for the first goal. Still, just his very presence just had Juventus on the back foot. And as Mourinho said afterwards, him bringing on Fellaini meant that Allegri had to bring on Barzagli, and then they lost Cuadrado on the break, and the, just that knock-on effect just shows Mourinho's thinking all the time, and we've seen it before. He sometimes just gets it absolutely spot on.
I was going to say, do you think Mourinho then out-coached Allegri to an extent?
Yeah. Completely.
Simple as that.
he got done, and but it is always dependent on other factors, because, for instance, in the first game, we saw there was no Fellaini and Mourinho couldn't find another way out. So at certain times he'll just grab onto something that always works for him. At United, it's for Fellaini, always seems to work for him, and when he doesn't have that, or Fellaini has an off day, or he's going through a bit of a bad spell, United don't have that plan B.
And just want to finish on Juve then, because obviously this is probably the first time you've really had a good look at Juve for a long time, and especially Juve this season, that are, as Jose Mourinho said, that they're going for the Champions League, and they're quite clear about that, and that's the competition they want to win. Like they dominated United over both legs. I mean, watching Juve, what did you take from this team, and do you think they're good enough to win the Champions League?
They just need to score more goals when they're on top. I think it's as simple as that, because they have been on top for long spells of both the games. And when it comes to the latter stages, if you think of this, had this been, and obviously you play the game differently if it is a two-legged affair, had this been a two-legged affair, United go through because of the away goals. But, you know, they just have to be that more, a bit more clinical when they're on top, because otherwise it could trip them up in a similar situation further down the line. That being said, Dybala again, like his feet, I could watch that all day long, the way that he plays with the ball, and also, you know, they were a bit unlucky in the terms of like Dybala's shot off the bar and stuff like that, but
Khedira hit the post,
yeah, exactly, but it's a running theme, they have to make the most of it, they really do, because they could have won both games 4-0.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have you back on later in the season when United get through to the next round and face Inter, Napoli, Roma, and maybe Juve again.
So there we go, Pandy. A couple, just wrap it up on Juve then. I think they had like 23 shots on goal, and I think it's the most they've had in a match since like 2013, I think, against Real Madrid. Something stupid like that. So it's like crazy. Do you think Allegri should be a bit worried that you've got Ronaldo, you've got Dybala, you've got Douglas Costa, you've got Pjanic, you've got all these wonderful players, and you're struggling to score the second and the third that you really should?
I don't know. I honestly think it was just one of those bizarre nights where it just wouldn't happen for Juve in the final third, and for Man United from two set pieces it did. I really don't think he should be that worried, because I think it was only last week where Allegri was kind of bemoaning the fact that he was sick of winning maybe 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, where they were kind of finding the net but conceding these one goals every time, like they did against Calgary in the last league game. And then I think his exact quote was he wanted to win more games 1-0. They lead by a goal with 3 minutes to go or 4 minutes to go, whichever it was, and they do manage to still throw it away. So I think it was just one of those nights, to be honest, where, you know, they had plenty of chances, didn't take them, and Man United did them.
I think as well it might kind of be a wake up call almost, because they smashed Man United over the, like, yeah. The point that Chris made about the Juve would have won. If it was a knockout game, Juventus would have lost, on away goals.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Which is
to think.
A scary thought when you think about it, considering the domination.
Yeah, exactly. But they absolutely smashed them over two games, which is really, really crazy to think about. So I think that's something, obviously, Allegri kind of lit the players know, say, right, you got away with this here. Like, the game really isn't that important, but you can't do that in a quarter final or a semi final, because then that'll matter, then, essentially. Yeah. So there we go. Right, let's go to the San Siro, because big bad Barcelona came to the San Siro. Lionel Messi sat in the stands because he still hurt himself. And guess what? Malcolm scored. That's Roma's Malcolm, if you remember, Paddy. And then Icardi scored with 3 minutes left. Obviously, all the people doing reports on that game must have been loving it, with a goal in the 83rd and then 87th minute. So This is almost kind of the same as the Juve Man United game, but except it was the home team that got absolutely battered and managed to get something out of it in a kind of almost smash and grab way as well.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they just couldn't find that second goal Inter. But I think for all that Man United was a bit of a travesty that they managed to get out of Turin with 3 points. If Inter had left that game with a win, I don't even know what the word would be for that though, because they got absolutely battered themselves. I think it was the lowest amount of shots that they've had in a Champions League game since 2009, when they played Man United, and it was the most shots Barcelona have ever had in an away game in the Champions League since that kind of data started being collected. So that just pretty much tells you how badly Barcelona battered them. And yet again, when you don't put the game to bed, you don't kill the game off, it gives the team a chance. And
Big Mallory Cardi, you
just can't give him that kind of room in the box. I know it kind of came from a mistake. I think Barcelona did have their chances to clear it, but the ball makes its way to him and he finds a way in. And you do kind of have to take your hat off to them. That's, what is it, two Champions League games they've played at home this season, and all three of the goals, I think, have came pretty late on. Oh, that might have been the earliest one, actually, the two Spurs goals, obviously, very late in that game. So they do...
That's the thing. That's their thing this season, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's to score goals late in games. So whatever kind of fitness regime Spalletti's put the Inter guys on this season, it's working, because I think I can't remember the stat, but I think of all the teams in Serie A, Inter are the team that scored the most goals in the last 15 minutes of matches.
Yeah,
and obviously that when you take that into the Champions League as well, it's obviously better.
Well, absolutely, it's just. Whatever it is about them this season, there's absolutely no giving up in them. And even, I know some of those games, obviously, they've scored goals late, like they did against Genoa when they were battering teams. But that shows you they're just as willing to, you know, keep looking for going for the jugular late in games that are already put to bed, as they are to kind of chase games down, like they've did against Tottenham and then Barcelona. And like we said, they probably didn't deserve to win, but that's a massive point, because to get anything from the two games against Barcelona, considering how they've kind of turned themselves around now, and especially when you're trailing to a late goal like that, that's a massive point for Inter, and especially given what Spurs did against PSV, kind of rescuing themselves right at the end in that game. It's huge for Inter to have the 3 point lead over Spurs, as opposed to the 2 points that it could have been if Barcelona had held on in that one.
Yeah, exactly. A big result, really important. Another kind of... This result it's a big result, but I think other results make this an even bigger result, or it could have been an even bigger result, because obviously Napoli drew 1-1 with Paris Saint-Germain, Juan Bernat scored, and then Insigne scored to equalise for him. That came off the back of Liverpool getting beat off Red Star Belgrade, which really kind of keeps that group super, super tight. And obviously Napoli are still unbeaten in the Champions League this season. So this is another one of the kind of good Napoli Champions League performances. And is it the Ancelotti effect, would you say?
You probably could argue that, because, you know, it was a really, really tough group. And I think at the start of it, you know, a lot of us probably, I think I pretty much had wrote Napoli off, you know, what Liverpool did last season, getting to the final and then competing with the millions that PSG have had. And, you know, Tuchel in charge there, you don't quite know how that's going to go for them this season, chasing the Champions League that they're kind of doing every year. But like, the money they've got to spend, incredible compared to Napoli, and yet over two games, I think that Napoli, they can actually more than hold their heads up. I think they probably were the better team over two games, and, you know, maybe a lot of people disagree, but I think if you got to the knockout stage, I'd be a lot more worried about playing a team like Napoli than PSG. Like, I know they have that firepower and all that, but, you know, Napoli just seems to be sneakily good this season under Ancelotti, and they're just kind of ticking along, and a lot of rotations, and a lot of people are getting their chance, and everybody's kind of coming in and out, which is completely different than we'd seen under Sarri. But yet, no matter the competition, you know, they're picking up impressive results almost every week. I think, you know, it was quite amusing to see Buffon at the centre of another penalty storm, considering his his antics after the penalty that he was given away in Madrid last season in the Champions League. Probably just about a penalty. I can see why, as a goalkeeper, he'd be quite annoyed about that one. But what a penalty as well from Insigne, actually. I suppose you don't often give credit too much for penalties, but he really kept his head well there.
Well, we had our very own Vieri Capretta at the Stadio San Paolo to watch the game. And I had a little word with him as well to see what he thought. So, hello, Vieri.
Hi, Dov.
So you were at the San Paolo, hashtag FAF at the games. What did you think? Was this another Napoli masterclass?
It was definitely a masterclass in some respects for at least 20 minutes early in the second half. But it wasn't as good as the games against Liverpool and Paris Saint-Germain. Of course, when you get a result like that, a draw against Paris and, you know, going very close to a victory, it was still a great performance by the Partenope. But I think compared to the game at the Parc des Princes, this time around, Napoli weren't as efficient in controlling the whole match. But we're talking about a minimal difference. They were still very good. Ancelotti's put together a fantastic team in very short time as well. I mean, taking over from Sarri, maintaining all the positives of Sarri's football and adding that quality in being able to perform accordingly to the opponent, which I think is the big difference to what it was last season. The rotation, making everyone feel important. Ancelotti's been great, and we saw that also on Tuesday night, Napoli getting an important result and, of course, now putting themselves in the best condition possible to try and make it past one of the most difficult groups they could have ended up in.
After the game, obviously, there was a few controversies, and Neymar said that the referee lacked respect. And do you think that PSG were unfairly treated in the match?
To be very honest with you, from the stadium, it never felt like there was any referee decision that was that gone the wrong way. I mean, Neymar might be saying that, but to be very honest with you, it didn't feel like that at all from the stands. And feels like Napoli and Paris Saint-Germain were both treated equally, and the draw is a fair result.
And obviously, like I mentioned before, with Liverpool losing, Napoli are top of the group. Paddy thinks they're in a strong position. Do you think they can make it through?
Napoli can definitely make it to the next round, absolutely. I mean, they need to get those 3 points against Red Star. I know it feels even worse not having done that in the first game, in the opening game of the Champions League campaign. But as Hamsik said, before they do, they make any other thinking about the future, about the next round, they just need to get those 3 points. Doesn't matter how, but playing as they did against Paris Saint-Germain and Liverpool, they will be able to get rid of Red Star. And I think Napoli deserve to go through from what they've shown. And I think they've got everything in place now to do it.
Well, there we go, everybody. We've just got one Champions League match to quickly go over. And that was one that I thought was going to be very, very difficult. And that was Roma's trip to Moscow to face CSKA. But they went to Moscow, they came back with a win, Paddy, 2-1. Lorenzo Pellegrini getting the winner after Kostas Manolas scored early on. And then a Sigurdsson, Arnor Sigurdsson, he scored the equaliser, assisted by Akhmetov. I've been practicing my Russian names.
Yeah.
There you go. So I think, Paddy, you were doing this for Forza Italian Football, and you went with big Lorenzo Pellegrini because he got the assist for Manolas and obviously got the winner.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Put Roma pretty, not officially through, but pretty much through in this one.
Yeah, I think there'd be a pretty big shock if Roma managed to throw it away. But with Roma, you know, you just don't know. I think they will get through, obviously. They're not going to throw this away. But this game just shows that you really don't know what kind of Roma you're going to get this season. Like, they've went to Napoli and been battered for the whole game, and yet they've left with a draw. And then you look at Cesca, a team that have beaten Real Madrid in the competition this season. And I'm the same as you, and it's people might write that off, but Di Francesco said it was a big thing. Even stuff like the cold in Moscow at this time of year, you know, I had that down as a really, really tough game for Roma. I thought if they got out of that with a draw, they'd actually be doing well. So for them to get out with it with a win was very impressive, but not quite for Di Francesco. You know, he was really, really angry pretty much throughout the whole game on the touchline, and then he even extended it into his interviews after the game, where he basically said, you know, Roma might have won, but he was not going back to Rome happy at all. He's quite angry with the players. He was angry at how easily they gave away possession, just long balls back to the opposing goalkeeper and kind of letting Akinfeev build from the back for Cesca several times, particularly during the second half. And it wasn't the smash and grab or anything like that, you know, Man United and Inter had in their games that we've discussed already. But I think Roma, they did a few moments where I think Manolas in particular put in some big blocks. I don't know if, I wouldn't say that they didn't deserve to win, but you can certainly see why Di Francesco was so angry and animated in the second half. I think the red card in particular, although it was deserved, was probably a big help to them as well.
Indeed, and obviously they've got Real Madrid and Victoria Pilsen in their last two matches, so you don't really see them screwing it up, so they should be in the knockout stages as well. Here's one thing I forgot to ask you about. What did you think about Jose Mourinho's gesture to the fans after the game?
Well, I'm no great fan of Mourinho, Dov, but it would be hypocritical of me considering I'm, you know, kind of one of these people who bangs the drum for emotion in the game and that kind of thing. And, you know, I can see, you know, you take a lot of stick for 90 minutes. Oh, he's within his rights, isn't he, to kind of give it back to them a bit. And, you know, if he's going to play the pantomime villain, I say let him, because, you know, you need that kind of character, don't you, though?
No, to be honest, I thought it was absolutely hilarious. To be fair to him, like, he wasn't getting dog's abuse for 90 minutes, or not from the whole
Well, the way that he likes to tell it.
Yeah, no, I think it was after Juve scored, like, they just basically, the fans went at him, and it was quite funny, and I was like, I was waiting to see what he was going to do. Because obviously after he put up the 3 for Inter winning the treble, Old Trafford, he's obviously got to do something. There's no way he's not going to do anything. And then when he did that, obviously you've seen Bonucci, who celebrated after when he scored for Milan against Juve, loving it. And I think
the only thing that would have been funnier, Dom, was if Bonucci had stuck the nut on Jose in the centre of the park. That would have been.
Well, it's funny, they all get angry over stupid things, but then they do it just as bad as well.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I never thought of that point about Bonucci kind of rubbing a celebration in that maybe he couldn't have. Even Ronaldo, Dov, during the game, didn't. I was kind of.
He celebrated, yeah, he went for it. Yeah, I love that. I love it that a player celebrated.
But then I kind of thought maybe was it just the goal was so good and so out of nothing that maybe he just forgot. He just got caught up in the...
He wanted to show everybody his abs, Paddy. That's it. He was just waiting for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen Jesse Lingard today. He put a picture of Ronaldo and his abs and then his abs and says, who did it better? So you can go and tweet Jesse Lingard to see who's got the best abs. What else? And the other one, I just want to mention this, if people haven't seen it, but they probably have, but Graham Souness on whatever TV programme he was commentating, like could have been a pundit on, saying that Jose Mourinho could have caused a riot, and conveniently forgetting the time where he popped a Galatasaray flag in the centre circle at Fenerbahce's pitch, which McCarthy picked him up on. I thought that was quite funny. It's just
anything's going to cause a riot.
If you really want to antagonise a team, you do it in Turkey, in a derby, and you go and plant a flag in the centre circle, and that's going to cause a riot, not cupping your ear to some fans who've been annoying you for the whole game. So you go, right, Champions League's done. Italian teams are looking pretty set. I think we've got good hopes that all four can get to the knockout stage.
Shouldn't they, Dov, at this stage?
I think they're all in really
surprised.
They're all really, really strong positions to get through. The only ones that play, but I think the way they play, they should be able to do it. So that's good. And obviously, we'll have a much clearer picture in the next match day. Now, let's quickly move to the Europa League. We'll start off in Seville because Real Betis played Milan. It was 1-1. Giovanni Lo Celso scored after 12 minutes. And then Big Suso, who is absolutely smashing it for Milan right now and making me look like an absolute idiot, he got the equaliser just after the hour. Now, Paddy, I know you didn't see all of this one. I did. Milan got absolutely destroyed in the first half. I think they only had 32% possession. Betis... They should have had at least another two goals. Like, this is another one of those. They created loads of chances, had the team on the ropes, didn't put them to bed. And then Suso, I think he had a free kick over, and it looked like Bakayoko was going to miss the ball. It looked like he was going to head the ball. He missed it, and the free kick kind of just curled in at the back post. It's probably the best thing Bakayoko's done in a Milan shirt, not getting the ball where he probably wanted to. Suso, everybody knows, I'm starting to get pelters on Twitter about Suso and how I don't think he's very good, but he's making me look silly, Paddy, because he keeps scoring, he keeps getting assists.
Are you going to just have to hold the hands up there, or are you going to keep fighting the good fight?
I might move on to he's in very good form right now. I think I'm going to move on to that one.
Just pick on Bakayoko instead.
But then he might get good and then I'll look really stupid.
It's a danger.
I'd be a lot more confident in Bakayoko not being very good.
You're not wrong with the Suso good form, not one or two.
But like over the two games, I mean, Betis are struggling in La Liga and Milan have played them at home and away and been by far the worst team. Like, they should have been battered tonight, and they probably should have got battered in the first game a bit more as well. And it kind of tied everything up in Group F. So you've got Betis top on 8, Milan and Olympiacos both on 7. So you've got a big game in Athens.
Yeah.
Paddy. Milan go there. Basically, that's winner takes qualification.
Yeah, but the big thing, I suppose, Milan having their... in their arsenal is, I think, Dudelange still have to come to the San Siro, don't they? And they are, you know, it's a surprise that a team like that got this. But it was a surprise that they scored in Athens.
I was just going to say, they scored their first ever Europa League group stage goal tonight.
I know. I may have had a little bet on Olympiacos not to concede a goal. Maybe that's why they conceded. Dodgy betting patterns, but... yes, maybe if they can score in Athens, they can shock the San Siro. But I think that's the big thing. I suppose Milan still have in their back pocket. It kind of puts the pressure on Olympiacos, I suppose, to get something, pretty much a win actually from their game against Betis. But even if they were to draw and Milan were to beat Dudelange, which you expect them to do, then, you know, as you said, it still leaves it kind of winner takes all in Athens. And I think you were at the Olympiacos home game. That's not going to be an easy. It was, I suppose, tough enough in Milan. Never mind going there. So
I think as well, like a lot of the kind of. You get a lot of the reaction that are like, oh, this is terrible, this Milan team's terrible. Like in the Europa League, Gattuso's kind of played up almost like a second string team in the games. And so you can kind of expect them not to be kind of firing, really. And kind of when they're coming up against the likes of Dudeland and Olympiacos, like the players maybe struggle a bit to get up for it. That's why I think, anyway. Tonight he kind of changed it. He played a 3-5-2 initially. And did not work in the first half. He changed it to a 3-4-3 in the second, and Milan were a lot better. So I think what he's doing now, which I do really like, is actually trying different formations and experimenting a wee bit. Because he kind of stuck to this 4-3-3 for a long time, and I don't think it fits the players. And I think he's going to find a system that works. I'm hoping he stumbles on a 4-2-3-1. I think that would be the best. I'm hoping he stumbles onto that, because he's kind of in the area. And I think if he does that, you'll probably get a good run of form out of Milan. Not just in Europe, but in Serie A as well. And right, Paddy, last, but by no means least, we've saved the best to last, because Lazio beat Olympic Marseille 2-1 at the Stadio Olimpico. Marco Parolo and Correa scored a goal each to get that. And then Tovin scored on the hour, which was a consolation for Marseille. But that win means that Lazio go through alongside Eintracht Frankfurt in their Europa League group. So they're the first Italian team to qualify for the knockout stages of European competition. They're loving it this season, Paddy, in the Europa League.
Yeah, it's not bad going that as well when you consider that the finalists from the competition last season were in their group, and they're sitting on 1 point. Yeah, with four games played, they're on 1 point. So fair play to Lazio. I think that's just something you can always rely on. It seems to be whatever happens at the weekend in recent years, when it comes to a Thursday night, you can kind of back Lazio to step up to the plate. And they have been inconsistent, I suppose, at best in Serie A this season, but they are doing it in Europe. That was the Eintracht game in Germany was a bit of a, it was just a freak night, an off night. The red card in the first half came, so that didn't help them that night. So I think you can kind of maybe not write that one off, but kind of look past that one. And Eintracht are definitely a good side, but it's kind of, I suppose it's what we say about Lazio most season. If they can kind of get the right draws in the knockout phase, they'll be a worry for any team, because there's goals in that team, and
the big one as well, obviously, right, Correa scored, and he's a guy that a lot of the kind of Lazio fans have been wanting, like, why is he not getting a chance? Obviously, he came in, he's a good, tricky wee player, good dribbler, and he showed that tonight. It was dangerous, and this looks like it's a kind of the gate, like, you know how sometimes players, you get a game, and it's one that kind of turns everything around for him. I think this could be that game for him where he could start playing a bigger part in Lazio's season, and kind of playing either instead of Luis Alberto, or maybe kind of alongside the Immobile, or maybe even help Inzaghi change the system a wee bit as well. Because as much as Suso has his he's in negative comments for me, Caicedo is terrible. He is a terrible striker, and if Lazio if Lazio have to rely on him for any length of time, then yeah, it's not going to be very good.
That's the worrying thing, that he's pretty much the backup. That was the one area Lazio seemed to neglect in the summer, was they didn't buy that kind of backup if the worst should happen and Immobile was out for an extended period with injury. It's like you said, it's Caicedo pretty much that they're relying on for goals, unless they rejig things. And to be honest, I'd put Lucas Leiva up front before I'd put Caicedo up there.
Yeah, well, there you go, everybody. Who would you put up front instead of Caicedo? That's a question. Yeah, but like Lazio, again, another kind of impressive performance in Europe. And like you say, that one kind of blip that they had, but they're doing good, and there's The other good thing in the Europa League as well that they're doing is they're getting some of the, I want to say reserves, but some of the kind of backup players, and they're getting a game like Cataldi, who's essentially the reserve of the reserve. Like, he's kind of backup to Lucas Leiva and Badel, and he had a decent game against Marseille as well. So you've kind of got players there that are getting games in the Europa League, and they're playing well, which kind of can only benefit Lazio over the course of the season. So there we go. All right, I think that's everything. Obviously, forstathinefootball.com, everybody, hashtag FIF at the games. There's a big game this weekend, Podrick. Obviously, Parma go to Torino, which is the big one on Saturday. And then there's another wee one on Sunday. I think that's Genoa. No, that's not. It's Milan versus Juventus.
Oh, that other team from Turin.
Other team from Turin, finally. Yeah, so it's Milan, Juve, so obviously, get yourselves onto forzaitalianofootball.com because we will be there and we'll have loads of stuff up around the game and stuff like that. So get on. Let us know what you think. Podrick, thank you very much. Absolute pleasure. Late on a Thursday night, but people, you need to appreciate the work and effort we put into this because I'm knackered. And so is Paddy. He's did a quiz. His brain's in tatters.
Oh, I know.
My body's not working anymore. Connor and the gang will be back on Sunday night after Milan Juve to have a look at the weekend Serie A. So make sure you tune in for that live on the YouTube. And until the next European round of matches, there's nothing left for me to say apart from arrivederci.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.